as soon as I turn the metronome off. I pull up the PowerPoint. Okay, GarageBand is happening. We're going to rooms. What do you think? What is it? Something scary looking, right? What is it? Where is it? Take a guess. Where is this? Yeah. Major sacral decubitus. Stage 4 sacral decubitus also. This is smuggled out of the ER in the local hospital. There's a lawsuit resulting of neglect resulting from this case. This is contraband. Contraband for this. Yeah, bad, huh? Look at that. What are you looking at? You're looking at a buttocks. Okay, sacrum. There's the anus. Yeah. There you go. Look at that guy's hand. Here, we have another picture of it. Get another little angle. So look at how large that person's hand is. Here's my hand. It's probably about the same height. So we're looking at, 10 inches, 8 inches across. Deep, huh? Although, believe it or not, on a malnourished elderly individual, this could happen within 2-3 months. Or it could be years of neglect. But on someone that is at high risk, it can happen pretty quick. That really shows you the depth. That's why I like this one, because you can see how deep into the cavity of the body it's going. And someone in the morning class said, well, wouldn't it hit an organ? Well, no, because what's there? Not much, right? It's not going to hit an organ. It's going to hit bone first and stop, which is exactly what happened. So, some of you are bothered by this. then you probably don't want to go into wound care. Not surgery. You're going to be one of those, an hour in surgery, you're gone, right? Write the paper, that's it. And other vets are, wow, look at that, is that cool? So it takes all types to be a nurse, and we're all needed. If this is grossing out, that's not a problem. Doesn't mean you're not going to make a significant impact on nursing community. But some of us like the blood and gore. It's fun. And enjoy doing dressing changes. Right, Amanda? Where's Amanda? Yeah, was that one awesome burn dressing change that we did the other day? Awesome. Did we ever do well? Amanda did it. I just supervised. You want to tell them about it?
Sure. So we had a burn on the right top of his head because he spilled all the water out. And he changed it so it was wrapped up with
Curlex. And to dry it off, we used sterile 4x4s. Well, it's clean. It's pretty impossible to keep it sterile, but we kept it clean. Silvadine. It was exactly like putting icing on a cake. That was the consistency and exactly what you were doing. Well, they're, it's like a Vaseline gauze, where they're like a cheesecloth that's soaked in Vaseline, so it's not going to, it's petroleum-based, and there are many different kinds, so you're not going to stick to the wound. If we put regular gauze on there, what would happen next time you opened it up? Yeah, well, not quite. Not any respiratory problems. But it would, you'd pull off the scab, right? It could be awful. So we use this gauze-based, this petroleum-based gauze. Curlex again. That was a dressing change. Amanda did an awesome job. And it was pretty deep. It was a really bad burn. Actually, it was on the upper shin, right? Or was that cellulitis, or was that the burn? The burn was up his skin. This was an Irish crab fisherman. Yeah. Probably intoxicated when he spilled the... Not because he's Irish, but because he was a party guy. Okay. Yeah, and it was great. It was one of the best dressing changes I've done with a student. I'm so glad to have that experience. And we didn't think to pull in all your friends because they were doing something other exciting things. Okay, so please, you're not going to have the opportunity to do wounds. Jump in. I know a couple of my students were able to watch the wound nurse do it. Today, they're in hospitals, they're often wound care teams. So the opportunity for nurses to do wounds such as Amanda got to do are diminishing because there are nurses that are experts in wounds. They come around to do that in large hospitals. Just like now, there are IV specialists, or there are respiratory specialists, there are nurses and other auxiliary staff that are experts in the area. The nurse used to do everything. As we're getting more and more specialized, our opportunity to do everything anymore is diminishing. But wound dressing changes are still, like where I work, the wound team does them like every third day, and the regular nurse does it the other days. So there's still a good opportunity for wound changes. And the smaller the hospital, the more opportunity you're going to have. Or if you're in a burn clinic, of course you'll be doing a lot with wounds, depending on your area of expertise as you're in practice and specializing. And when are you going to do wounds in skills? A couple weeks, I think. After break? Yeah. You will learn to do them in a sterile technique. That's wonderful. That's great. You will learn sterile technique. Then you will go to the hospital and be immediately disenchanted by the lack of sterility that's used in wound dressing changes. Remember that in this program we teach you the highest level of competency. And ideally, if we could do every wound dressing change in the hospital sterile, that would be great. It's pretty impossible. So we do it clean. Like Amanda says, yeah, we do our best. She did the sterile saline on it out of the syringe that we use to flush the lines, that same thing. Did it on it, and we used sterile pads to wipe it off, and she had her gloves on. She didn't have sterile gloves, but she used her gloves, and we were real careful. We were careful with our sterile technique with the Silvadyne and how we did that. And so you're going to learn the basics of sterile technique, and many of those you will employ in a clean technique to minimize the passage of microbes, and that's what we want you to do. Please don't be disenchanted as you move into the hospitals. Don't say they're not doing it right. They're just doing it different. And is there more of a chance because they're not sterile of bacteria contamination or microbe contamination? Yes. But you also have to think of all the other factors that go into it. Hospitals are filthy places. To create a true sterile environment in a hospital room is pretty close to impossible. So we do the best we can. We do a pretty good job. Amanda's work was a great example of that. We use lots of practical protocol that you will learn as you learn to do dressing changes in the lab here. And you'll carry that forward as you learn to care for wounds. So just remember what the skin, the anatomy of the skin is. You've got several layers, right? You know that. Remember what the skin was. So what's a wound? Again, a huge spectrum. All a wound is a disruption of the normal anatomical structure and function of the skin. A paper cut is a wound. It's a disruption of the normal anatomical structure, correct? So is that stage 4 sacral pressure ulcer that I showed you. So look at the continuum of wounds. You may have a little tiny wound that's going to heal in a matter of hours to a huge wound that will not heal in that person's lifetime. They don't have enough years or time left or resources to heal that wound. Okay. So the word wound is fairly all-encompassing. Now, how a wound heals is, I think, pretty fascinating. The first stage is just the regular inflammatory response of the body. Okay. You know that. The blood vessels constrict, clots form. We learned about how that happens last week. Now, a pressure ulcer like the one I showed you is going to heal by growing up from the bottom and in from the sides. Now, a surgical wound, you're going to have it, you're going to bring the edges together so the edges are approximated. That's a little different. Then it's going to grow together. A pressure ulcer that's open like this, you're going to heal. It's going to heal coming up. So you're going to see collagen and granulation tissue form in the wound. Now, you're going to be able to look at that tissue and recognize it as granulation tissue. There was a student this morning that a physician did an interesting procedure, and she was able to actually watch and look at the granulation, and he was able to point it out. Granulation tissue looks like a cat's tongue, but ideally you don't want it to be the color of a cat's tongue. You want it to be really red. You want it to be beefy red. Why would you want it red versus like pink or gray like a cat's tongue? Why do you want it red? Why is that a good thing? I mean, when I first saw it, I went, that's good. Oxygenation, yeah, you're getting good blood flow. If it's red, even a little bit of bleeding is not bad. That shows good flow. If it's all gray, not good. Okay, you're not getting oxygenation, so that's bad. You almost want a little blood there. That's okay. Real beefy red, looking like with a little texture. It's that granulation comes up. So the collagen and the granulation tissue forms. Okay, so it's going to come up like this and grow up and from the side to make it a little smaller. And then what do we get? We get the collagen fiber strengthen the wound. It's all kind of pulling together, right? And then remember, you've had wounds where it's a little raised and pink, your scar at first. You've all had wounds that look like that. So yeah, that's stage 3 of the repair. The collagen fiber strengthen. Now the scar is all filled in and the scar is raised pink. Stage 2 may take ages depending on the density or the extent of the wound. You may have a lot of dense granulation tissue having to grow. That may take years. Or it may be just a little tiny abrasion and it may take a couple days. So again, depending on the wound, the continuum is huge that you can get. Okay, stage 4, the scar becomes flat, white, and it's gone, right? Sometimes you can see a little bit of discoloration or a little difference in the texture of the skin, but not much. Okay? So yeah, that's the whole basis to the process of healing. But there are a lot that goes on that affects a person's ability to heal. Again, your geriatric population, they're not going to have the oxygenation ability, right? They're not going to have the infection fighting ability. So their wounds are going to heal slower. No matter what kind of wound it is. If it's a surgery, they're going to take longer. You know, if it's a pressure ulcer, if it's a hangnail, it doesn't matter. They're definitely going to take longer to heal. Versus a child, children are amazing. They have great circulatory systems. Except for their infection fighting, which is good too. They're just exposed to a lot of infection. They heal very quickly. Seniors don't. Or anybody with a suppressed immune system. A cancer patient whose body is busy fighting off the cancer, or a diseased person, any kind of disease. The body's putting its emphasis there, and it has to work with a wound too. Okay? It's more stress on the body and its ability to heal. Circulation, oxygenation. You just learned all about that. You can see how important that is to get oxygen to the tissues. Someone with an impaired lungs, with impaired lungs, for instance, they have pneumonia. Is that going to affect the healing of their surgical wound if it's a post-surgical infection? Absolutely. Everything's working together. So if the circulation and oxygenation isn't optimum, it's going to take longer for that wound to heal. Will it heal? Hopefully, probably. Is the healing impaired? Absolutely. Okay, so again, the whole body working together. Overall patient's wellness, are they a diabetic? Do they have heart disease? Do they have respiratory problems? Any of those are going to disrupt their healing ability. Are they malnourished? Again, do they have what it takes to form the skin? Maybe, maybe not. Hydration. What's hydration status? All things you're going to look at and you're going to optimize in order to increase that person's chances of fast healing. Obesity. Why is that a problem? Pardon me? Circulation, mainly, yeah, circulation. If you've got all the adipose tissue to work with and keep alive, it's hard to get to the wound to heal. Infection, we talked about that. And we talked about chronic illness, diabetes, alcoholism. All going to affect the length of time it takes for someone to heal. And then you have potential complication from wounds. Infection? Yeah. Always a problem, even with a surgical wound. Although we do use pre-op antibiotics, use antibiotics, we even bathe the whole wound area, everything with the whole, if it's in abdominal surgery, we often bathe the whole peritoneum in a fluid antibiotic solution. But still, infection is a common post-surgical risk. Possible complication. Hemorrhage. Yeah. If that clotting doesn't happen if some of those internal stitches come out, you bet hemorrhage is a real problem with surgical wounds particularly. Or any wound. If you're not clotting and you're severely damaged, your tissue, you're going to bleed. You're going to hemorrhage. Okay? So it's a problem. There's always a story about the new night nurse who is absolutely amazed when her patient's dead because everything was fine and she neglected to ever look under the patient at night. An abdominal wound that started bleeding, all the blood went right down, top sheet looked great, blanket was fine. Okay, all down, the mattress was soaked in blood and the person bled out of the night. And that's a classic. So you always look at the wounds, even if you think, oh, I don't see anything. Well, no, look at them. No, we don't generally change the dressing the first time. I said this when we discussed surgery. That's generally done by the surgeon. But we can sure look at it. Okay, so tell me what the dressing looks like. Don't just say not applicable or you did not observe. You looked at the dressing site. Yeah, is it fine? Is it dry and intact? That's normally what we say. Is it dry and intact? If it's all red and bloody, we have a problem. We better get somebody up there and look at it, or you go look at it. Okay? So yeah, just because they're post-surgery and you know you're not supposed to open that dressing doesn't mean you can't look at it. You're going to tell if it's bleeding and someone's hemorrhaging. Delayed wound closure. Sometimes the wounds don't come together. This is called dehiscence, when they start pulling apart. A surgical wound, let's say someone sneezes really hard, has a horrible cough maybe, has bronchitis right after surgery. They're putting so much pressure intra-abdominally on a surgical dressing that they may, surgical wound, that they may actually pull it apart. Staples can come out. Dressings can rip, okay? From the intra-abdominal pressure, you can get wound dehiscence, a separation of the edges that reveals the underlying tissue. It can go farther into evisceration, where it separates and the organs start coming out. Okay, you see intestines or whatever coming out. What do you do if you come across someone in that situation? Say your 80-year-old neighbor next door had open appendicitis and they got pneumonia and they're staying at home coughing and wheezing and sneezing and they phone you and say, I think I ripped open all my staples. You come over and you're looking at it and yeah, they sure did. What are you going to do immediately? Put something wet over it, a wet towel, because the worst thing is for anything to dry out, right? You want to keep all that area as viable as possible. We don't want it to expose it to air, to the microbes. We want it to keep it moist and get them to the hospital. Okay? So, yeah, evisceration happens. Okay, what's a fistula? Anybody had an experience with fistulas? Yes, tell us about it. Yeah. Okay, that's one kind of fistula. The overall definition of fistula is an abnormal passage between two organs or between an organ and the outside of the body. In that case, we made it as a dialysis access, right? But it could also happen pathologically. A common time when a fistula occurs is during childbirth. If a baby's born too fast or there's not enough dilation of the vaginal walls, the vaginal wall, either in front or in back, can be torn. So you get a cystocele if it goes into the urethra, or a rectocele if it goes into the anus. So it's not at all uncommon to have an opening between the lower intestine, or the rectum, and the vagina. Okay, that's a classic fistula. Okay, so yes, then you have fecal material going into the vagina. Easy operation to fix, they do it all the time. because it's very common. Okay. So if you end up with a rectus seal, don't freak. It's very simple to fix. Many, many women have it. But that's your classic example of a fistula, an abnormal opening between two parts of the body. Or, yes, we make them. Sure, there are times when we create fistulas for dialysis. That's the only thing I can really think of. And sometimes we have drains going, but that's not really a fistula. Yes, Wendy, you have a question? Depending on where the fistula is. A fistula is just a word for any abnormal opening between two organs. In a rectocele, there's a thin wall of the vagina. Right next to that is the rectum. So if there's pressure during birth and that wall separates, then you have an opening between the rectum and the vagina. So, yeah, and that's a rectocele. Okay? Got it? Okay, so that's a fistula, and that's an abnormal passage. It can happen with wounds. Wounds, psychological problems, fear, anxiety, right? Self-image. 14-year-old girl has a laceration on her face. It's a huge deal, right? I know, at least my group, since we have a new breast cancer surgeon at Marin General, we've dealt with some patients with mastectomies. Yeah, it's a huge deal. Surgical recovery psychologically, right? So yeah, wounds are a big deal psychologically. Fear, anxiety, pain, they're painful. And self-image. So you're going to inspect your wound. And that little link I gave you, please take a look at that nurse's lecture, that professor. She gives a beautiful little lecture on chronic wounds. So please take a look at what she... I'm not able to pull it up decently to show you. You would do better on your own because of the technology here. And also, she has it, like, locked, so I can't steal anything from it. That's my first thing. It's going to steal her photos, and I can't cut and paste. But take a look at her lecture, because it's really good. She goes over a wound assessment very specifically, tells you just what you're going to do. You're going to look for signs of infection. You're going to measure that wound. You're going to look for redness. You're going to talk about the color, the depth. All the intricacies will be part of your wound assessment. And some of you saw the wound assessment at Marin General, right? Who saw that? Oh, did you see that? Yeah, what did that... That was a wound nurse. And what did she... Do you know what she wrote down? What was her assessment? What was she looking for? Texture, redness. Texture, color. Size, yeah. She measured it, right? She actually measured it, I bet, with it. The ruler, correct? Good. Right. What Anne's talking about is they actually drew on the body. It sounds like that wound was infected at one point. So outside the wound was a reddened area. So they actually drew on it, drew on the body. This is where the redness is right now. Then it can go back after an antibiotic therapy and say, great, you know, this antibiotic's working. Look at where the redness is now. It came in. So she assessed that. That was good. Anything else? That's about it. Depth? Dry and tight, yeah. If it's dry, wet, whatever. Just every descriptive word you can think of to describe the appearance of that wound. But there's some basic things like the size, the color, if there's drainage, the depth. All right. If there's any odor. Okay. Those are all pretty basic things. But please review that link I gave you because it's excellent. Yeah, hand washing, hand wasting, yeah. Hand washing, sterile or clean procedure. You're going to, ideally, if we could do it sterile, as I discussed, that'd be awesome. We end up doing clean. And as Amanda said, normal saline is generally the preferred cleansing agent. And you want sterile normal saline, ideally, right out of one of those syringes. Works very well. So you want to keep wounds clean, change dressing according to medical orders or agency procedures. In more and more agencies, hospitals, it's the wound care nurses who dictate the orders for changing the dressings. The surgeon will, if it's a surgical wound, but if it's a decube or any other kind of wound, more often it's the nurses that write the protocol, write the instructions that they want carried out regarding how those dressings should be done and what different procedures as well as ointments with salves to increase the healing. So a lot of risk factors for pressure ulcers. We open this lecture with showing you a stage 4 pressure ulcer. People that are at risk have impaired sensory perception. They can't feel. Who would this be? Give an example of someone with impaired sensory perception. Perfect. Paraplegic, yeah. Quadriplegic. They get them big time. So he teaches people how to use mirrors and how to inspect their body. Very important. Because they're not going to feel it. Right? We also people with neuropathies, diabetic neuropathies. We teach diabetics to take meticulous care of their feet. Because they're not going to feel it. There's a problem. Yes. Sacrum. Mm-hmm. Or she could just. Yeah. Huge mess. Good. Good. It is. And sometimes they even do surgery. They do plastic surgery to reconstruct. It sounds like it for her. That they move the fat surgically from a leg or thigh probably into the cube. Yeah, it's done. Plastic surgery is done on decubitus ulcers just to fill it in, or else it's going to take her actually years to heal. Did I talk about tunneling into cubes too? No. I should have in the last lecture. Decubitus ulcers, they don't always present like the one I showed you. You can have a very severe ulcer that's only the size of a quarter or smaller, and then tunnels down, which sounds like possibly this one, because we said it went all the way to her legs, tunnels down into the tissue. Okay, remember caring for a lady once had four of them. They all tunneled down into her buttocks, and there were tunnels of infection and wounds all over her backside. Okay, now kind of connected. It took like 2 hours to change that dressing and put the gauze, we would soak gauze and medicine in just these strips and just start putting it in, and it would go on forever. So don't just think that a little tiny hole, that's all there is. Very often decubitus ulcers tunnel, so that's something else about them. Okay, yeah, we talked about impaired sensory perception. We have some excellent examples. Very good. This lady also had impaired mobility, right? Dominique's patient. Yeah, impaired mobility. That's a real problem. If someone's not going to get up and around, what's happening to their blood flow? What's happening to the oxygenation? It's not, correct? Yeah, so that's why we get people up and walking. Friction. You've dealt in general with your elderly clients, right? Wow, how's that skin? Paper thin at times. You can tear it by just moving them across the bed. That's sheer. Shearing. Just from moving them across the bed. It can so easily break. And as we get older, our skin gets thinner and thinner. And the wider you are, the thinner it's going to get. So you get these fragile Caucasian people with just truly paper-thin skin at the end of their lives. Alterations in the level of consciousness. Yeah, if you're bumping around, if you're not completely conscious, that can be a real problem. How about moisture? What are we going to see that's a problem here? What's moisture problem? Incontinence, yes, big time. Absolutely. People are incontinent. The urine is going to break down the tissue. Fecal material, even worse. Okay? Yeah. So that's sometimes we catheterize people just because they're at such risk for being incontinent because of skin conditions. And knowing the risks of catheterization, you may think that's a little extreme, but it's commonly done because we can't have them. Their skin's so fragile. We can't run the risk of having moisture and increasing their possibility of skin breakdown. So a lot goes into it. So pressure ulcers, that's what we've been talking about. Very common on the heel. You'll see a lot on the heel. You'll see this in the little slideshow that I gave you the link to. There's a nice example of what we do to protect heels. We have these little boots. POTUS boot is one brand that keeps the heel up. The other common place, obviously, is the sacrum. And believe it or not, I have once saw a pressure ulcer on the head. Okay, but that's more rare. You see them on the sacrum and the heel. That's where people lie. That's where the pressure is. We talked about immobility. We talked about malnutrition. We talked about fecal and urinary incontinence. We talked about impaired mental status. Diminished sensation, we talked about that. Wendy mentioned elevated body temperature. Yeah. Peripheral vascular disease. I alluded to this in diabetics. But people with any kind of vascular impairment, it's going to be a problem. So they don't have to be diabetic. They could just have a peripheral vascular disease. Okay. Any kind of decreased vascularization is not going to bring fresh oxygen and everything that wound needs to heal to the site. Localized edema. Yeah. Why is the localized edema a problem? You have swollen feet for some reason. First, because you're a heart patient, cardiac patient. You have edema in your feet. Why is that going to put you more at risk for a pressure ulcer in your heels? You have edema. You're a cardiac patient. Why would I be particularly concerned about your heels? Say it again. Venous stasis? Is that what you said? What'd you say? Louder. Circulation? Not exactly what I'm thinking. What's happening to the skin in edema? Yeah, it stretches, exactly. So if the skin stretches, what happens to it? It becomes thinner. What happens to a balloon if you blow it up? Is it as strong as with when it was not blown up? You can puncture it a lot easier, can't you? Same thing with skin. Okay, so any edema is going to do that. It's much easier to break down edematous skin than it is non-edematous skin. So localized edema is a problem, and we see this on feet a lot. So that's where the heels come into play. The cardiac patients, you know, have their heels up on pillows. Float the heels is what they call it. Takes nothing to slide a pillow under the couch. Get those heels up. And chronic illness, we talked about that. Diabetes, heart conditions, whatever we're going to lead to. The possibility of pressure ulcers. Pressure ulcers have defined stages. And you would be expected to be able to stage a pressure ulcer on the next exam, if not sooner in clinicals. So stage one is non-blanchable redness. The skin's intact, and there's a little bit of redness to the skin. Now, blanchable means when you push it, it turns white and comes back. That's what your skin is doing now if you push it. It gets white, correct? That means that the blood leaves that area, but it quickly comes back. Non-blanchable means you push it and it doesn't turn white. So you put a little pressure on it and it doesn't turn white. That means that redness is from some inflammation. It's not from a lack of blood supply, which is what you're doing when you press on your skin and it blanches. So non-blanchable redness of intact, lightly pigmented skin gives you some redness. And it's reversed if the pressure is relieved. So this can be cured in a day if you relieve the pressure. But this is stage one. This is why we rotate people. So they don't move beyond a stage one. Hopefully don't even get a stage one. Now, stage two, in my experience, this is when the CNAs call me. You have a partial skin loss involving the dermis or an epidermis. There's some breakdown. The lesion is superficial, looks like an abrasion, a shallow crater, or a blister. And actually, on one of my 400-pound ladies yesterday, she had a tiny slit in two places. I know most of you probably have never dealt with this kind of obesity. Her breasts were huge, obviously, and there's so much. And then her stomach, again, was like folded over. So you have this area underneath her breasts and underneath this fold of stomach that's like trapped in there. Perfect place for bacteria to grow. Horrible. And in these two places were these inch-long little slits of redness. Yeah, that left is going to be a mess. What's going to happen? It's going to have its nice, moist, warm area. Bacteria is going to love it. Okay, particularly yeast, not bacteria, fungal. Yeast is a prime candidate to enter into that area. So what do? We keep it dry and clean, right? Now, I walked in yesterday. I'd care for this woman last week. I was there again yesterday. The CNA was putting talcum all under the area under her breast. And I said, stop right now. I don't want talcum on any of my patients. So they're like, what? Never heard that before. Why do I not want talcum on any of my patients, period, at all? This is hard. Jody, what do you think? Why would I not want talcum? What's in talcum? Just guess. What does talcum remind you of? How about cornstarch? Kind of has the same feel as cornstarch, right? Yeah. Talcum has a lot of starch in it that feeds yeast. Okay? So if you have this kind of environment, I mean, talcum is great if you're going to put it on a bedpan, slide it under somebody. Somebody wants to, you know, just kind of put it around there, anywhere that's not going to be confined. Okay, but not somewhere that's going to have skin folds. Because she's thinking, oh, it's going to keep it dry, which, of course, is a lovely thought. But it's also going to feed yeast and make them grow there. So she's going to have a yeast infection before the end of the week. You know? So, no, you want to put washcloths or a folded pillowcase maybe in those areas. Or even better, because the CNAs love to use powder, I order some antifungal powder. My physician ordered some of that for her. So I said, no, use a nice statin powder, please. She said, really? Yeah. Okay? So educate the CNAs, because they're thinking talc all over the place. It smells good, it's all clean, can you keep it dry? No. And you're responsible. If it's skin breakdown, who's responsible for that? The nurse, not the CNA with the talc. Okay, so you're going to see, at stage two, you're going to see a little superficial abrasion, shallow clater, blister. Okay, maybe swollen, painful. This is going to take a couple weeks after you relieve the pressure. It's going to take a bit to heal. Stage three is worse, full thickness. Now you've lost subcutaneous tissue. Now you've got a crater. This goes down. All right, not exceptionally deep, but there's a crater. Likely a foul-smelling drainage. Likely there's some bacterial infection here. Very likely. May require months to heal after the pressure is relieved. Again, depending on the health state of the person. Stage four, this is what you saw. Extensive damage to underlying surfaces. You've got tendons, muscles, bones. The wound can appear small on the surface but have extensive tunneling. This is what I thought I had missed telling you about the tunneling. Okay. Usually foul-smelling discharge. Local infections can easily spread, causing sepsis. And what is sepsis? Did I teach you that? What's sepsis? Bacterial infection of the blood, yeah. And that can commonly happen from a wound. And someone can die. Like the person from the photos did not survive. They couldn't. There's no way. They died of sepsis brought on by those wounds. Several months or years, if ever, to heal. Sometimes you get people that they will never heal. They can't. Yes. You die with it. Well, usually these people aren't active. They're not mobile. They usually have something going on where they're bedridden. Some kind of disease state that's attributing to the breakdown to begin with, or to the inability to heal, to the process of healing, to the vascularization, to the oxygenation, to whatever. Yeah. No. Most of the time we can cure them, we can heal them. We use wound vacs. Have you seen a wound vac? Those black spongy things that go into the wound with a little suction machine. Take a look at those. Those are wonderful. We use those a lot. They help. And yeah, I've seen dramatic healing. Yes. But you can get to a point like this patient where it's so enormous and they are so deficient in their ability to heal at all. And this person was nutritionally deprived and everything else, plus aged. But no, the majority heal, and most stage 4 heal, and they go on and be fine. But no, the ultimate would be what I showed you. We start at the worst. But is it the norm? No. This is shock value. Okay. Any more questions before we move on? You got the stages, 1, 2, 3, 4. You can recognize them. You can chart them when you do your assessment of decubitus ulcers, correct? Good. There you go. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. Pretty simple. Photos of them, but these aren't as good. Please go again to that website I gave you and listen to that professor's, not listen, read that professor's lecture. Look at her slides. They're better than mine. And darn it, I tried to drag them over. It wasn't going to happen. She has a block. All right. So we talked about, is a person going to die? Well, all depends on what's their nutritional status. What's their tissue perfusion? Is there infection? How old are they? What psychological impact does this wound have? This all influences whether or not a person is going to heal. Hopefully they will. Most do. And then it affects the time in which they heal. So infected wounds is a wound that has a pathogen in it. You're going to have drainage that results from the inflammatory process. The primary complication is sepsis. A wound gets infected, it's open to the bloodstream, and the bacteria moves into the bloodstream. That's your main concern about deep pressure ulcers, is that they can affect the blood. All right, you're gonna note some kinds of drainage from the wounds as you assess them. Serous drainage is clear, slightly yellow and thin. Sanguineous is what you see mostly from surgical wounds, thick, reddish, okay? Like blood, like coagulated blood, a little more coagulated. Often you'll see serosanguineous, combination of the two above, and you'll say serosanguineous drainage. And that's what you'll chart. And even in the paperwork we give you, when it says drains, what does the drainage look like? You can say serosanguineous, or sanguineous, or serous, right? Or clear, or put something. If you use the big words, that's really nice. Purulent drainage results from infection. So what's that going to look like? Smelly. Smelly, green, yellow, yuck, right? You're going to know purulent drainage when you see it. So you're going to promote wound healing. You're going to be careful about people's skin. You're going to protect bony prominences. You're going to use skin barriers for incontinent patients, creams, whatever. You're going to reposition this patient every 1 to 2 hours. You're going to use support surfaces, an air bed maybe, a special mattress, POTUS boots to keep the heels up. You're going to do whatever it takes to keep these pressure ulcers away. If it's an acute wound, there is debridement, which is mechanical, autolytical, chemical, or surgical removal of the dead tissue. When I was doing my graduate work, there was a person who was doing a lot of work with leeches and wound healing, leech debridement, where he would actually, he made surgically sterile leeches. Okay. Then he would put them into the wound. Leeches, animals. Then he would put them in the wound, close up the wound, and let them do the debriding. And actually, it worked beautifully. Because leeches will only eat dead skin. Kind of like the piranha pedicures you've heard of. Little fish pedicures. You haven't heard of that? Yeah. Pedicures with fish that eat dead skin. Mm-hmm. And does who die? The leech? No, the leech is very happy. They take it out. And then they can treat the wound, but that's part of the debridement. That's just a way to get the dead tissue off, is with the leech. The leech is as happy as a leech can be because it got to eat all the dead tissue. That's what they like to do. So that's debridement. Okay, so think of it as just getting rid of all debridement means is getting rid of the dead tissue. You'll see it done surgically more commonly. It's done at bedsides, it's done in procedure rooms. Okay. Can begin chemically, you can get chemical debridement, or you can even do it with leeches, or whatever works. Nutrition is going to be extremely important to manage a wound. You're going to want your diet, your patients on high-protein diets. It's a lot of protein. You want those red blood cells being made high iron. Right? You want to facilitate circulation and all the vitamins and minerals it takes to build the immune system and to bring oxygen to that area. And you want to educate your patient on keeping that wound clean and remaining healthy so that they have what it takes to heal. Dressings, you're going to talk about this a lot in skills, I hope. The little online thing speaks to dressings. Dry or moist gauze? Yeah, if it's going to touch the surface of the wound, you want it moist, always, 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 always. And never let it dry out. Because if you've ever changed a dressing where the nurse before you hasn't moistened the gauze enough before putting in the wound, and you're the one that has to pull out the dry gauze that's attached to the wound, you'll never do it to another nurse. So when in doubt, over, use a lot of moisture. So you'll be doing a wet to dry or damp to dry sterile dressing changes in lab. And these are the ones they're common dressing changes. Usually they're done 3 times a day. If you miss one, the afternoon, the shift before you didn't do it, get right to it because you don't want it drying out. You're going to cause a lot of trauma to that wound if you start to pull out dry gauze that's attached to the wound bed. Okay, that's important. We use hydrocolloid dressings. Protects the wound surface from contamination. They're specially treated kind of squares, specially treated foams sometimes. Hydrogels, again, treated wound. They're kind of like Band-Aids, but they're big, and they have some foam in them, treated with different kind of chemicals. And I did talk about a wound vac, so you understand what that is. When you walk in and see a black deflated sponge on somebody's body, that's a wound vac with a cord running out of it. Those are usually changed every 3 days. The entire thing is taken out and put back in. Where I work, regular nurses do it. In most hospitals, it's a wound team that comes and changes your wound vac. They're very interesting. So get in on that if you have the opportunity. When you're changing a dressing, like when Amanda and I did it, you got to make sure you have everything there. Ideally, in the Cardex, there's going to be a list of what you need. And ideally, the nurse before you has left everything you need. If not, if you have nothing to go by, you can open it up and see what was done before, put a sterile dressing over it, and go get what you need and come back. Okay, just kind of lay a sterile towel or some 4x4s or whatever over it. There's going to be some kind of securing. When Amanda did her dressing change, she wrapped it with Curlex, right, Amanda? All the way up. We took it as a whole big roll. Curlex is the big rolled stuff. You'll see it. We roll a gauze. Amanda used one per leg and wrapped the entire lower leg in Curlex to hold that dressing together. Sometimes we just use tape, ties. You'll see Montgomery strips that are two pieces of tape that come up with holes in them that tie. Which is very cool, because then all you do is undo the ties, opens it up, change the dressing, and tie it back together. So nurses are most ingenious and have come up with many, many different ways to tape, tie, and bind wounds. And as I said, wound care is very much, again, the arena of the nurse today. With the exception of a surgeon who will have something to do with surgical wounds, most wound care is nurse-managed today, which is very interesting. And is it Rose McCarthy? Didn't she go to a special wound clinic recently? Did she tell you about that? She was talking about it. Yeah, I think she went to a special wound clinic and learned even more great techniques. So when you're changing a dressing, remember that tape is nasty, particularly if it's on hairy skin. So carefully remove it. Gently cleanse the wound, right? Amanda and I just like gently scraped off some of the old stuff. We'd go, scrub it, okay? Gently cleanse it. It's a good idea to administer analgesics before the dressing change. You should always pre-medicate your patient before a dressing change. It's going to be much more comfortable for you and your patient. You're going to do a better job if you know they're not hurting too much. All sorts of different ways we clean the wounds. Yes, normal saline is the most common. There are other cleansing solutions. We irrigate it. Okay, we use irrigation. Sometimes there's suture care on a new wound. Nurses do the suturing or take out the suturing. You can be responsible for suturing. Sometimes there's drainage And you've seen, from surgical wounds, you've seen Jackson Pratt drains, right? Anything else? Some hemovax? Start looking at the drains coming out of wounds. They're very interesting. Again, they're taking out the fluid. Bandages, binders, all sorts. Okay? Gauze, elastic knit, webbing, flannel, muslin. You'll see it all. A lot of different ways. Sometimes we do heat and cold therapies. And we educate our patients. And this is where I want you to look at Dr. Rita France's little lecture. It's not long, and it's really good. It's just a little more of what I said, more in depth. But before you leave, would you like to earn some more exam points? No? If you don't want to, that's fine. You can go. But if you'd like to stay and see him, let's see. What am I going to do for you guys? We did respiratory for the morning, so let's do cardiac for you. How's that sound? Is that fair? Oh!